From the land of Grand Hill University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 18th day of February, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net. And Mike Tenor will join us to take a look at the weather forecast. He's from T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Along the way, there'll be an ask for those of you that live in Champaign County as it relates to the United Way. So stay with us right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn down 2 3/4 today at 550 1/4. New crop December 3/4 lower at 459 1/4. The March beans at 1375 down 8 3/4. And November at 1186 1/2, 2 1/2 lower. Wheat futures were up 18 1/2 in the lead March. They finished at $6.62 1/2. Live cattle futures finished down $1.22 1/2 in the lead. The feeders 22 1/2 cents lower, and lean hogs on the day were up 2 1/2 cents. Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net now joins us from Windsor, Illinois. Thanks, Matt, for being with us. I know you probably were keeping up on the USDA Ag Forum. Yesterday, they released some acreage figures. Today, there were some numbers as it relates to 2021 prices. What'd you think of them?
You know, I think that the acreage figures, I would say, are fair. You know, given kind of what we were expecting coming in, I think the average trade dress was right at 183 combined corn and beans, and you got 182. You know, I think it's definitely believable. You got to think that we are going to make maybe a new record as long as the weather cooperates, given the fact that profit margins are so robust. So, you know, I can kind of go along with the acreage figures anyway.
And they have a $4.20 corn price on the season's average for the new crop, $11.25 for the old crop, or rather for the new crop soybeans. Is that in line with what you're thinking?
Yeah, I think that it certainly is a believable number. You know, I can't imagine that you're going to see the USDA on the baseline numbers anyway get into anything too outlandish. I think that their assumptions are always going to be that, you know, that you're going to see normal weather anyway. Nothing, you know, too surprising. So, I don't know. I can kind of go along with those prices. I think it remains to be seen. We all know that we're looking at better prices currently. But at the same time, they've got to make the assumptions that we're going to have a normal size crop and that things are going to get back into some sort of a state of equilibrium.
Given what you saw today, what do you think the changes you might see could be produced in the supply and demand figures? I guess there won't be changes, but for the new crop, what do you think the S&D table will look like? Will ethanol be very good? Will the exports remain good for corn, soybeans, that sort of thing?
You know, it seemed like Seth Meyer was talking that basically he feels Chinese demand is going to stay pretty strong, you know, moving forward, both corn and beans. Obviously, we've got a lot of competition from South America, but I've got to think that when you look at the S&D tables, you've got to make the assumption that this corn export demand is going to actually stay pretty strong. You know, I don't know that I can step out here and say that this big number we're working with, you know, this year, USDA is at 2.6. I'm actually, you know, a little bit higher than that based upon actual sales. But, you know, are we going to carry that on into next year? That's a really tough thing to assume. But my personal opinion is that you're going to be looking at new crop, you know, at least carry out levels. You're going to have to get a pretty healthy yield, especially 92 million acres, to be able to get anywhere close to 2 billion bushels. So I've got to think right now that they're going to probably pare back demand some and make the assumption that these high prices are going to cure high prices and it's going to drive down demand somewhat. But I'm not totally buying into that yet. I just think that that's what they're going to tell us.
Yeah, this morning, Scott Irwin and Gary Schnitke on their webinar, and Scott was putting some projections forward for the 2021 crop. He wasn't as optimistic on price. I think he was at $4 and $11.70 or $10.75 for corn and soybeans, respective. And then he had a note about old crop exports for corn that they've not been shipped yet, and that could be problematic. Is it very concerning that China is into the market for such a large export that has not been put on the boats
Well, you know, it's certainly something that has been talked about. You know, are they going to take all this corn? First of all, are we going to see cancellations? Second of all, you know, and then third of all, are they going to maybe roll some of this corn into the next marketing year? And I certainly think that those things are all possibilities. The timing of the purchase, I think, is kind of something we got to keep close watch on, because if the timing of the purchase, you know, was anywhere close to when we actually saw those sales posted, and I think most assume that the purchase was significantly before that, maybe even 3 to 4 weeks. But regardless, you know, if it was anywhere close to the sales that whenever we saw those actually posted, you've got to think that there's a chance that they won't roll out of those sales due to the fact that you know, prices really haven't rallied substantially. So, you know, I don't know. I got to think moving forward that the Chinese are going to do whatever's going to be in their best interest, as they've always done. I wouldn't ever rule out that they're not going to make some sort of cancellation if someone will allow them out of some of these sales. We're hearing a lot about soybean cancellations right now. There's nothing that's hit the wire, but we're hearing a lot of rumors that, you know, there's a fair amount of double booking that maybe has gone on, and that we're going to be seeing some of those cancellations moving forward. So whether we see those or not for corn, I don't know, but I'd almost bet money that we see a few for soybeans probably in the near future.
Meaning they double booked both U.S. and Brazilian soybeans on the idea they weren't sure they were going to get them out of Brazil?
That is the assumption that we are making based upon the information we're getting. And so, you know, right now you saw yesterday, actually, the Brazilian soybean basis actually, you know, improved. And so, I mean, improved for a purchaser. I mean, you know, they actually saw that basis drop a little bit. So, you know, U.S. beans right now, I believe at the Gulf are, you know, running 70, 75 over, you know, whereas down in Brazil, they're running five under. So I've got to think that if there's a way that they can roll out of some of the purchases that they've made, that they're certainly going to do so. We've seen them do it 1,000 times in the past, and I don't think this year is going to be any different.
Was there action in Chicago today worth noting?
Well, you know, overall, I've got to think that it was kind of nice to see the markets, I guess, come back off the lows just a little bit. You know, on corn, I mean, we're only a couple cents off the lows, but regardless, you still saw these corn close pretty close to that 460 level that we closed at yesterday. You know, no beans up there at 1185 and three quarters. We are ensuring that 21 should be a really good year, especially for those that are purchasing revenue insurance. I highly recommend someone do so, especially with the kind of revenue you can protect this year. So those are the two things that I'm watching the closest, you know, as we round out February. But at this stage of the game, you can't move those averages a whole lot unless you really plummet on prices. So we feel pretty confident about the way things are looking.
Just offhand, you're saying for corn crop insurance plus ECO?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just talking of straight up revenue policy. It's nice to see that your average for your spring price is going to be at that 459.5. Or, I mean, 459 is where we close today. But that you're going to be putting your average today is probably going to come in around 453. Whereas on beans, you're pushing 1170 pretty close. And so I'm just talking about a straight up revenue. There's so many different policies. Like you said, we can accentuate some of these policies. And I think that it's something me as a producer, I'm going to protect as much income as I possibly can.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Matt Bennett with AgMarket.net. Well, up next, and ask for those of you in Champaign County, the United Way Farmers Feeding Families program is looking for a landowner and a farmer. Saville Rodriguez from the United Way and Scott Williamson, a volunteer organizer of the program, now join us to talk about what they'd like. Scott, can you give me a little background on Farmers Feeding Families and how long you've been involved?
Hi, Todd. About 7 years. I got involved when I joined the board at United Way, and we started, and a local farmer, Pete Sage, conceived in this idea, and that's when I got involved.
Well, tell me very quickly what the idea was, and then you have something you'd like folks in Champaign County to think about, and we'll come back to that at the end, but give me a preview of what that is as well.
Right. So Sage Farms up at Thomasville, Pete Sage had the idea that, you know, here we are in the most fertile farm ground in the world, and how in the world can we have people in our local community experiencing food insecurity, you know, being hungry? And so he tried to come up with a way that maybe the agricultural community could get together and make a dent in food insecurity. So he thought that he was pretty convinced that if he could find 80 acres to rent at a reasonable cost, that he could convince his suppliers to partner up and donate all the input, seed, fertilizer, chemicals, grain drying, grain marketing, everything that we would need to produce a crop, and thereby involving the entire ag community in Champaign County, and we could put a big dent in food security. And that's exactly what happened. So he approached United Way to handle the money because United Way has a pretty good handle locally on where the needs are. And if we could come up with a way to raise some money to help people get fed, that people that are possibly insecure in terms of food and meals, that United Way could go a long way to helping the ag community make a big dent in that. So we started with 40 acres. That expanded to 85. We rent about 75 acres from Unit 4 schools. And then the Latinia Group, Gale Athletics, Dave Hodge, actually donates a 10-acre patch for us at no cost. And so all the inputs are donated by the local ag community. Sage Farms plants the crop and cares and maintains the crop through the summer. And it's half corns, half beans. And then we bring in, we have a big feed and some on about at noon on a day in October. And we bring in about a dozen farmers that with combines and grain carts and semis. And we, in under 2 hours, we get about 80 acres, 80, 85 acres harvested and sent to the elevator. So the only real cost that we have really is our cash rent. So it leaves a real nice margin to be able to donate to the various food pantries and food banks locally. I think at this point in time, after 7 years, we're a little over $200,000 that's been donated. And Salvo can talk a little bit more about, you know, how we've used that money.
Yeah. So you're at the end of this, we'll talk a little bit about this, but you're looking for another parcel of land and hoping to involve more farmers in Champaign County. You're on the north side of the county of Champaign at this point, but you're looking maybe to go in a different direction. Somebody with property on the east, west, or south side of Champaign Urbana. Salvo Rodriguez, you are the director of new business and campaign development at United Way of Champaign County. How are the funds used that are raised from this property?
Thanks, Todd. Yeah, we really, like Scott said, have really focused on food programs. Places like the Food Bank, Sola Gratia Farms, Piecemeal, Meals on Wheels, and the Community Center at Northern Champaign County are the areas that we identified where we could make the biggest impact and where food insecurity is a goal of theirs as well. I think that the funds that we've been able to raise have been just tremendous. We're able to give grants anywhere from $3,000 to $10,000 to make sure that we're able to get food insecurity curbed or in certain cases, non-existent. I'll give a perfect example, the Piecemeal program that delivers food to rural communities and rural folks here in the county. Used to have a wait list, and the Farmers Feeding Families program completely eliminated that wait list just in our second year of doing the program.
Salvo, has the need been met in Champaign County? You talked about Piecemeal not having a wait list anymore, but this does much more than that. And how much of a need is there in Champaign County?
Well, I wish I had an exact number for you, Todd, but I don't. But I can tell you that like I said before, the need is there, especially given the impact of COVID. I believe that we've been able to provide over 90,000 nutritious meals because of this, which tells you what the need is out there. And, you know, while we're closing the gap, I still believe that there's probably some more that we can still be able to accomplish and feed in the families as our community grows.
You were hopeful that you can expand the program. Scott, what is it you'd like to do?
You know, we've got 7 years under our belt on the north side of Champaign County, or north side of Champaign-Urbana. We would basically like to replicate what we're doing up on the north side, on the east, south, or west side. So, you know, we're looking for, you know, a landlord or two that might be interested in partnering with us that would be willing to, you know, charge us a reasonable cash rent, but, you know, not off the charts. And then a farmer or two that might be willing to get involved with us and kind of play the role, a role similar to what, the Sage Farms on has done on the north side, and kind of help us organize, you know, supply donations, input donation, and that kind of thing. And, you know, basically find another 80 acres that we could rent and do this all over again, thereby doubling the size of our help towards this, insecurity in the county.
So I suppose they can simply contact you at the United Way to get the ball rolling if they're interested.
Absolutely. And we're happy to share some examples. We've got over 20, local businesses that have partnered with us, and, we're probably, Scott, you can correct me, but I think there's probably over 30 farmers that have partnered with us on this. So, you know, if you're looking for information, I bet that there's a farmer that could tell you about their impact, or an ag business that is partnering with us right now that would love to share what kind of impact they're having and how they're able to share that with their clientele.
Scott and Salvo, thank you for being with us.
You bet.
Thank you.
Thanks, Todd.
Scott Williamson and Salvo Rodriguez joined us to talk about the Farmers Feeding Families program here in Champaign County, Illinois. If you're interested in helping, you may contact the Champaign County United Way. Let's check in now with Mike Tenura. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Mike, thanks for being with us. I'd like to get started quickly today. In Argentina, to begin with, their growing season has been interesting, and it sort of fluctuates, but they've always been on the tougher side of the growing season. Do they remain so?
Well, they were pretty dry to start out the growing season. Then they saw some decent rainfall from late December through late January. And that kind of took a lot of the pressure off of later planted corn and most soybeans. Since then, though, it hasn't rained very much at all. They've had not much since February 1st, and there's not much on the way over the next 10 days. So the story in Argentina is going to be one of drying conditions as we head into March. Soybeans are turning sensitive at the moment, and they'll stay sensitive through the first couple of weeks of March. So this story is not totally over with yet, because we do need to see more rain eventually. The story might not be a very interesting one today because, again, it did rain just about 15 to 20 days ago. But add on 10 to 15 more days without rain, and then you have something to talk about.
Does that change as you go northward through the growing regions of Argentina into Uruguay, Paraguay, and southern Brazil, and then into the primary growing regions in the central part of that nation?
Well, it certainly does in southern Brazil and Paraguay because they've been experiencing similar weather over the past few weeks. But the difference in southern Brazil and Paraguay is that their soybeans were planted much earlier than what was planted in Argentina. So because of that, this dryness is not hitting the crop in the same manner. The only exception would be in Rio Grande do Sul, which is one of the few states that produces a full season variety soybean crop. So this dryness is not all that well timed, but one thing we need to keep in mind is that it has not been hot during this dry spell. It's actually been pretty cool, so that's also masks some of the effects of this dryness. But as we move forward, it does warm up a little bit. It does stay dry. So just in Rio Grande do Sul will be the one area that we'd be concerned about in southern Brazil.
And they're harvesting in the central west part of Brazil. They have wet weather there?
They certainly do. They've been seeing scattered to organized thunderstorms over the past 10 days or so, and it continues. We really haven't seen this pattern come to an end, and based on everything that we can see, the cool fronts that continue to allow these storms to form are not going to move a whole lot. Basically, one front will move on in, then it dissipates. Then another front moves on in, and it dissipates. And that continues going all the way out into March. So it's going to be a bit of a challenge, we think, to get all the soybeans harvested in a rapid manner and get all of that next corn crop planted in a rapid manner. So we certainly will see all that happen. It just matters, you know, how long is it going to take? And will there be any quality losses between now and then?
Here in the United States, of course, the story has been the deep cold. By deep, I mean it's all been really cold, and it went deep into the U.S. all the way down to Texas. Is this kind of big change have any impact, as you think about it, on what's coming for the growing season 21-22 for here in the U.S.?
Well, the one thing we've noted is that this is a remarkable pattern change, because even though it is very cold out there, and this will go down as one of, if not the coldest February of the last 126 years across the central U.S., the more interesting piece of this story is that it was so mild leading into this period. November, January, and December, if you combine those 3 months, so basically the 90 days leading up to February, that was the fifth warmest period of the last 126 years in the Corn Belt and the Central Plains. So to see it be that warm and then now have it be this cold is highly unusual. And in fact, this will be the largest temperature change between those two periods in over 126 years of record. And even if it isn't the number one biggest change, it certainly will be number two, three, or four. What we did then is we looked at the 25 biggest temperature changes over that period of time, because this is a clue of something going on in the atmosphere. And the interesting thing is that in any particular summer, and when we talk about the summer, we're just thinking about July and August in the Corn Belt. In that period of time, the chance to be way warmer than normal is basically about 16%, because you have 20 years that could be much warmer than normal, and you have 126 years of record. So 20 divided by 126 is basically 16%. When we look back in the record at that July-August period, 36% of those were much warmer than normal and ranked among those 20 warmest of the last 126 years, including four of the five top warmest. And these are not years that you're familiar with, because they go back so far into the past. We're talking about 1901, 1914, and then the Dust Bowl years of 1934 and 1936, and also an honorable mention to 1947. So this is not a sure thing that that's going to happen, but the probability is much, much higher than it was even just a few weeks ago, because again, this is just a clue of something unusual happening. If we look at rainfall, the story is also pretty interesting. We've been on the extreme side, to the wet side or the dry side, in that July-August period, basically 60% of the time, but it was evenly split between the dry ones and the wet ones. And so what does that mean? It basically means that this summer has a much higher than usual probability to either end up on the wet side or the dry side, but the chance of coming in the middle is considerably lower than normal. So this is just a clue of probably what's going to be a volatile weather period coming up, and whether or not it all happens is just a probability. We don't have any other information other than that at this time. But once we get into May, June, July, we'll start to get more clues as to which way we're going.
Hey, one final thing. Snowfall in Chicago. Is it accurate that 8.5 inches or so, or is there something different closer to the waterfront?
Well, the official observation site for Chicago is at O'Hare Airport. And if you're familiar with where that's located, it's actually about 10 miles northwest of downtown. So it's not truly in the city, but technically it is, just because of the geography. And that location was moved over the years. It used to be at Midway Airport, and then before that, it was at a different location. And so we did see 8.5 inches of snow on Sunday into Monday, but that was at O'Hare Airport. At Midway Airport, which once was the official observation site, there was 17.7 inches, and there was a swath of basically 17 to 20 inches of snow that was on the eastern side of the city, right along Lake Michigan, stretching all the way from downtown and then up into Evanston. And this wasn't the only snow like this that we saw. We also saw quite a few snows like this, or not maybe as bad as that one. But basically, in the end, at Midway Airport, there's been over 40 inches of snow in just over 22 days. And I can attest that the snowfall that we've seen on some is pretty amazing. It's just deep, it's widespread, it's everywhere. And it's really a sight to behold.
And that's lake effect snow?
A lot of that was, yes. We had the system that went through all of Illinois on Sunday into Monday, and that dumped anywhere from 3 to 8 inches across a pretty wide area of the state. But there was a northeast wind that essentially was originating from near Grand Rapids, Michigan, and that was blowing along the full length of Lake Michigan. and then it was pointing right into far northeast Illinois. And so as the system came in, we started to see the system snow, which is affecting everybody. But then we saw this lake effect band develop, and it didn't break up for basically about 18 hours. And even before the snowstorm started for Illinois, it was on Sunday morning, we saw 3 inches of snow in just about 60 to 75 minutes in this intense lake effect band. And then there were several more of those throughout the evening and even into Monday morning. So that was why Lake Michigan people, at least right along the eastern side of the city, saw much more snow than even just 5 or 10 miles to the west.
I guess that's a nor'easter, and it doesn't happen very often.
Well, it's hard to get a northeast wind like that because you need to have the northeast wind set up for many hours and maybe even a period of 12 to 24 hours. So if you think about it, when you walk outside, the winds are usually from the west, not from the east, and certainly not from the northeast. So it's just an unusual setup to see that right into the northeast part of Illinois or even stretching out of the north into Wisconsin, though it does happen. And me personally, I thought it was fantastic. I just love the snow, and this was just such a cool event to have happen. So it's one of the benefits. I'll have to remember this when it's 40 degrees in May and everyone else is 80 because of a lake breeze.
Indeed. Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Sure thing.
That's Mike Tenere. He's with T-Storm Weather in Chicago. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand at WILLAG.org. That's willag.org. Or if you scroll down the page there, you'll find a way to listen to us as a podcast in some of those podcast applications like Stitcher and SoundCloud, NPR One, Spotify, Google Podcast, and Apple Podcast too. However you listen to us, thank you so much for joining us here at Illinois Public Media. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.